I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. In this talk, we'll talk about our ongoing calculation of the UV behavior of N equals A supergravity at 5 loops, in collaboration with Zvi-Bern, JJ Carrasco, Wei-Ming Chen, Henry Johansson, and Rabiu Roiman, following up on their successful construction of the integrand announced earlier in this workshop. So the problem we'd like to tackle is the behavior of N equals A supergravity at 5 loops. It's been predicted in several papers, for example, by Bazar, Howard Stellen, Bicep, Elvan Friedman, Kiermeiser, Morales, and Spielberger, and also a paper by Green and Bjorsen. The consensus is that you expect the theory to be UV finite in 20 to 5 dimensions, but the first possible divergence will appear in 24 fifths dimensions. So we would like to do an honest calculation to check if that's the case. So to literally calculate the complete answer in 5 loops will be very hard. For example, for the a conceptually similar problem of the QCD beta functions at 5 loops, it wasn't done until 2016. To calculate the state divergence in 24 fifths dimensions will be even harder because the theory, the integrand turns out to be quartically divergent in this dimension. So involving numerators of quite high loop powers, it's an even harder problem. And the brute force calculation using the standard integration by parts approach would involve solving a linear system of the size of around 100 million, which would be extremely hard. One of the purposes of this talk is to formulate a maximal cut method, actually for vacuum intervals, which will give the so-called leading transcendental part of the UV divergences. So we know from experience that when you construct an integrand, you typically need maximal, next maximal, next next maximal, etc., many levels of cuts. But in very simple situations like N equals 4 super young mills with very good power counting, often maximal and near maximal cuts will be sufficient. So here we'll show you that for the UV divergence in any theory, there's a gauging invariant leading transcendental component which can be fixed by maximal cuts alone, allowing certain calculations to be almost done on the back of the envelope, even up to 5 loops. We'll give plenty of examples as we go along. Talk about N equals 4 super young mills and N equals 8 supergravity in their ultraviolet critical dimensions, i.e. the first dimension where UV divergence appears. That's 2 loops in D equals 7, 3 loops in D equals 6, 4 loops in D equals 11 halves. We'll also give an example of N equals 4 supergravity at 2 loops in D equals 5, which was analyzed earlier in our earlier paper using IBPs. Many of the examples will follow from the reference 1201.5366 by Zvi-Bern, JJ Carrasco, Lance Dixon, Henry Johansson, and Rabiu Roiman. We do many examples in this paper using our methods. That's the earlier treatment of up to 4 loops. We'll also write down some references. So our talk will be in the subject of cut integrals. One of the earliest papers is written by David Casalver and Kasper Larsen for the 2-loop double box, where they do where they performed contour integrals to reproduce essentially IBP reduction results, but without explicit solving the IBP system. And there are also recent papers this year by Samuel Abreu, Ruth Brito, Claude Durr, and Anand Gardi. And there's 1702. Our talk will be closest to the last two references, which use the Bicov representation to compute cut integrals. One of them is written by Bosma Sogard and Yang Zhang, who's in the audience. And the other paper is written by Robert Schadinger, also in recent months. So we will start to illustrate a method in the simplest case, which is at two loops. I'll talk about N4 super young loops, eight supergravity at two loops in D=7. So first let me write down the integrand. The integrand involves only two diagrams. So it has been known for like 20 years that for both diagrams, the N=4 integrand is just a constant without dependence on the loop momentum. It's just S squared T times A tree. So for the gravity integrand, it's simply the square of this. So this trivial is satisfied by the BCJ duality. It's the square of this, which equals S squared times STU, the gravity tree amplitude, the 4.3 amplitude. For both diagrams, you have color structures, FABC color structures, going counterclockwise. So the integrand is known here. To extract the UV behavior, we can simply set external momenta to zero in this case, because in D=7, these integrals are logarithmically UV divergent. So I write D7L1, D7L2, and now I have 7 propagators, which I won't write down explicitly. So you have a power counting mass dimension 14 from the integration measure. You have 7 propagators, each of mass dimension 2, so this is log divergent. The UV pole will be unchanged if you simply set external momenta to 0. So the double box integral on the left becomes a vacuum integral with the left propagator raised to the third power. Similarly, for the right propagator raised to the third power, the middle propagator unchanged. So here, a dot is just means the propagator is raised to higher powers. Each line here is just propagator power. Non-planar double box integral will be represented in this way. Just to be explicit, I'll write down the expressions. So this the planar vacuum integral equals D7L1, D7L2, L1 squared cubed, L2 squared also cubed, and in the middle, L1 plus L2 squared, not raised to any higher powers. The non-planar integral will be equal to D7L1, D7L2. Now I just change the indices to 2 on the left, 3 on the right, and 2 in the middle. L1 plus L2 squared. Square in the middle. So, okay, let me just to also label the momentum to be explicit, and similarly for this one. So, now, there's a very nice property of UV divergence in all dimensions, which is that the one loop, at one loop, there is no UV divergence in dimensional regularization, which follows from simple power counting, because dimensional regularization cannot detect power divergences, but only logarithmic divergences.
But it doesn't mean they don't exist, it means that...
That's right, that's right. So here we will just calculate the UV pole in dimensional regularization, so the two-loop UV pole. The consequence of the lack of UV divergence at one loop is that you can actually put these two integrals on the maximal cut, because if you if your numerator cancel any propagator, for example, cancel the middle propagator, you obtain a one-loop squared integral, which will be UV finite in seven dimensions. So I will perform these two integrals on the maximal cut. To do this, so now we'll show some tricks to compute these integrals on the maximal cut. Which should I? Okay, let me go over here again. So to do the integrals on the maximal cut, I'll use the so-called Baikov representation of these integrals. Can be derived by changing to polar coordinates and just do a change of variables on the integration measure. So ddl1, ddl2 will be proportional to dl1 squared, dl2 squared, dl1 dot l2. So these three independent dot products are used as integration variables. Now you have some Jacobian factor. Some Jacobian factor which arises when you when you change integration variables, and it turns out that the Jacobian factor is some polynomial raised to some power, and the polynomial is given by a determinant L1 squared, L2 squared, L1 dot L2, L1 dot L2. At higher loop orders, so this also works at higher loop orders. So at arbitrary loop orders, this polynomial will take the form a determinant of Li dot Lj. So now, so this can be derived by a very simple polar coordinate calculation, which I will omit in this talk. I'll just adopt the standard the notation in the literature. For example, in the notation by Kaspar Larsen and Yang Jiang, write z1 equals l1 squared, z2 equals l2 squared. So these z1, z2, z3 are these three inverse propagators. Now, which means l1 dot l2 equals z3 minus z1 minus z2 over 2. So I can substitute this into this and do the do the calculation, and so I will get the integration variable is just dz1, dz2, dz3. The polynomial in the square bracket will become 2z1, z2 plus 2z2, z3 plus 2z3, z1 minus z1 squared minus z2 squared minus z3 squared. Although this expression is a little long, it's basically what we expect, because vacuum topology, the sunset topology, has S3 symmetry. The three propagator are basically equivalent until you put the dots on it. So this is a S3 invariant expression. It's also following from the determinant expression, it's also SL2 invariant. And in fact, L-looping generalization will have SL invariance, which connects back to Julio's talk. But unfortunately, I won't establish that connection in any more details. Now the last step, this is integration measure, put back the propagators raised to higher powers. For example, for the planar integral Vp, the powers are 3, 2, and 3. I'll just put this back. Okay, so the so 1 over z1 is 1 over l1 squared, 1 over l2 squared, and 1 over l1 plus l2 squared, each raised to some power. Now I want to perform this integral on the maximal cuts in 7 dimensions, which sets d minus 3 over 2 equals 2. Since the z variables are propagator variables, you would expect the should be simple to impose the maximal cut, which means dz1 over z1 is replaced by dz1 times delta z1. But this prescription runs into problems because our propagators are raised to higher powers. So the solution to this problem is to treat these integrals as counter integrals. So there are several papers written on this. For example, there's a paper written by Matt Soga and Yang Jiang in 2014, which shows for higher propagator powers, the counter prescription will work. So basically, so every integral over the z variables will be turned into a counter integral around z equals 0. And so in the simplest case, if of the propagator, which is an ordinary propagator like L1 squared, not raised to any power, and the counter integral just pick up to a 2 pi I factor. It just produces a delta function. But the counter prescription is nice that it can treat higher propagator powers. So now I'll impose cuts on this planar vacuum integral. The cut version of this integral, it's just by putting these integration contours. And so here I have a polynomial raised to some integer power 2, some polynomial squared. To get a non-zero result from this contour integral, I need a factor of z1 squared, z2, z3 squared out of this polynomial, because after dividing by the denominator z1 cubed, z2 squared, z3 cubed, I will get a pole in z1, z2, and z3, a single pole in each of the z variables, and giving me a 2 pi I factor for each z factor. So the only contribution comes from this monomial, z1 squared, z2, z3, z3 squared, comes from this monomial in this expression. And if you just write down this expression, square it, expand out, and do some expand it out, you find that the coefficient of this monomial turns out to be 6.
Sorry, how it can be something quadratic square? So it is a uniform degree 4.
It's of uniform degree 4. This is also of uniform
5.
Sorry, it's 3, it's not 3, 2, 3, it's 3, 1, 3.
Okay.
Yeah. 3, 1, 3. Otherwise, it's a disaster. So it's D1 squared, D3 squared, which cancels against these propagators to give single poles in Z1, Z2, and Z3. So the coefficient of this monomial is 6. Now, so now I say the planar integral is proportional to 6 up to some overall normalization. Now I look at the non-planar integral. The non-planar integral put on the maximal cut, I have so the powers are
okay.
Z1 squared, Z2 squared, and Z3 cubed. So I have square, square, and cube for the three propagators. And to pick up a pole in these propagators, you need a term Z1, Z2 times Z3 squared. If I look at the coefficient of this in this polynomial, it turns out to be 4. Okay, so now I have a prediction that that's the planar divided by non-planar for their UV divergence. So only the UV pole comes in the 6 over 4 or 3 over 2 ratio. So this will only be valid for the UV part because I've thrown out a finite part by imposing the maximal cut. Since one loop squared can contribute to a finite part, but not a UV pole. So now let me compare this prediction against explicit calculation. For example, you can put on a uniform mass m on both three propagators to eliminate the IR divergence and just to compute the UV pole. And by explicit calculation in 7 minus 2 epsilon dimensions, the result I get is the planar vacuum integral has this UV pole, and the non-planar vacuum integral has this UV pole, which is exactly as we predicted, up to overall normalizations. I'll just, for the sake of completeness, I'll just write down the actual UV divergence in gravity and super Young Mills. So for Young Mills, if you do the color algebra, you obtain a sum over color structures. Sum over color structure nc squared times the planar integral plus 12 times planar plus non-planar. So this square bracket is multiplied by a single trace color structure. I'll omit the full expression. And then there is some double trace parts. The color structure which I omit. The gravity divergence for this 4-point amplitude is STU. So we have some crossing symmetric expression STU S plus T squared plus U squared of times the gravity tree amplitude, M tree, times the planar plus the non-planar integral. So the expression we are looking at is Vp plus Vnp. It appears in the gravity divergence. It also appears in the NC suppressed parts of the single trace are Young-Mills divergence. So both both divergences are proportional to VP plus VNP. And you could wonder, could there be any accidental cancellation between these two expressions and giving you some enhanced cancellation? And the result is no, because they come in 3 to 2 ratio, not 1 to -1 ratio. So here, I just...
This divergence in Young-Mills, it is the one which would be taken to minimization of Kaltin, right? Because, I mean, what you will do with this divergence in Young-Mills?
So yeah, I'm just showing it's not a finite theory in 7 dimensions.
You mean that the theory is not minimalizable, right? But in this sense, I'm sorry to go a little bit back, because in, by dimensional counting, you could have dimension 3 already could be divergence, right? The one which would become power divergence in this dimension. Because if you just count...
This n equals 4 should be n.
Yeah.
So it is very finite.
No, you mean that those atoms would be automatically zero or what? Because by power counting, you can calculate, you know, the integral will start to diverge. I mean, the diagram will start to diverge if at d equals 3.
I'm not sure what you're saying. This is super angle, so there's a lot of cancellation. The power counting is such that the first divergence is indeed equal 7, manifestly.
Yeah.
If you do it the right way, so that the supersymmetry is manifest.
I see. So it means that it would be 0 at more or less in this theory automatically, right?
Except up to 7 dimensions. 7 dimensions is the first place you could have a divergence. Anyway, he just argued that there is a
divergence. No, I mean that if it would be divergences, there would be logarithmic at lower number of dimensions if those power divergences would be not 0, right?
But the power divergence, that's kind of a fake. I mean, there's no power divergence. Whatever he said, that's just an artifact. There's no power divergence.
So here the power counting is extremely good. Like the integrand basically is a constant without dependence on the...
If you forget about n equal 4 and just counting dimension for the diagram, then I'm insisting that the logarithmic divergence starts at d equals 3.
No, but we would not do diagrams like that. That would be a really bad way of doing it.
No.
Much more divergent than it should be.
No. It means that this divergence you are saying that because of supernormals, it's automatically 0. Right?
Yeah, it just at the integrand level.
Yeah.
Before any integration. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go on. So I just think I won't have much time for 3 and 4 loops before I jump to 5 loops, but at 2 loops I'll mention another theory, which was studied by a slightly different but related method in our previous paper, and that's half-maximal supergravity.
Can I ask here with this representation? So how does it work at higher loops? Because you have this L1 plus L2 square, this grows quadratically.
So this is so actually here you get something of power counting 4. At L loops, the power counting in this polynomial will be 2 times L. So it will be some quite high degree polynomial.
Okay, but you cannot use these variables for any pairs of loops because that would be redundant. Right. And here at 2 loops, you use L1 square, L2 square, L1 plus L2 square. If I go to L loops, I cannot use all pairs, right? Because.
In D dimensions, actually, all pairs are independent. But in 4 dimensions, not the case. But if you go to D dimensions, Li dot Lj, Li squared and Li dot Lj, they are all independent because L can have arbitrarily many components and you can make all of them independent.
In unfixed
dimensions. Yeah. In unfixed, yes. So this representation will have some problem in certain integer dimensions, and it works well in general D dimensions, and it also works well in high enough integer dimensions. Okay.
Anyway, isn't it only at 5 loops that you'd run into trouble even at 4 minus 2 epsilon? Because that's when you get a non-trivial relation between the different loop momenta.
So at 5 loops, if you're working 4 dimensions,
yeah, that's when you run into trouble with this representation.
Yeah, that's right.
Before that, it should be okay.
Yeah, that's right. So for this reason, we actually just calculated the 5 loop divergence in 22 fifths and going on to 24 fifths, but we abandoned the calculation in 4 dimensions because it's not doable at least in this representation.
When you plug in some kind of specific dimensional value, do you need to worry about the divergence of this overall normalization factor? Probably just needless ratios of all kinds of orders.
So you are asking if I can guess the overall factor like this?
Yeah, sometimes when you plug in particular value of the D, actually the overall normalization factor is divergent.
So when I do this change of variables, there's actually some prefactor, there's some gamma function in front. So I haven't thought about that because I'm only looking at these the ratios. I'm ignoring overall divergences. And
why would that prefactor be divergent in some fractional dimension?
I think it's because there's a Jacobian of changing variables here. Because you assume that D is big enough, but then you see you only have three independent variables.
No, but I'm saying, why in some random fractional dimension? I mean, I can understand it might be trouble in low integer dimensions, but why in some, 22 fifths? Why would there be a problem there?
I'm sure there could be problems in integer dimensions. For some weird number like 22 fifths, I think it's very unlikely that you hit a specific pole in the gamma function. Okay, so I just mentioned since we've done d equals 7, we can do d equals 5 almost for free. So we actually need to do some non-trivial Taylor expansion in small external momenta. In 7 dimension, when everything is block divergent, you just need to set external momenta to 0. Here we need to do some non-trivial expansion, and we also need to do some massaging using Lorentz invariance identities. But those are not difficult, and when all the smoke clears, you just obtaining an expression. So I'll write in this notation, which I'll explain. So 2 times, so still the sunset diagram, 2 times I113 plus I122, these numbers label the powers of the propagators. So 113 is this one, 122 is this one. So I have 2 propagators here, 3 propagators here, and 1 propagator here. So 2 times this plus this. And in this time, it actually turns out to be 0. And actually, there's no standard counterterm, no standard symmetry argument for the UV convergence in D equals 5. Although there's an explanation in terms of the double copy structure. Unfortunately, that explanation relies on some very specific details, and it's hard to generalize to highly borders. So this is one of the simplest known examples of enhanced cancellations in supergravity. And to actually check this relation, we can simply put D equals 5 here. 5 minus 3 over 2, this is 1. So the calculation is even simpler. For the first integral, 113, you just identify the coefficient of minus z3 squared, which is minus 1. Remember, we don't have a square, we just have a linear power here. For the second integral, 122, you just locate the pole of the z2, z3, which is 2. So they come in the ratio of minus 1 and 2. And this just directly gives you 0. in agreement with the enhanced cancellation in this theory. Okay, so here we've illustrated the matter in details in two loops. Now, before I jump to five loops, I'll just briefly mention what happens at three and four loops. So, if we look at three loops in six dimensions, there are, for example, if we look at n equals 4 super young nodes, in the integrand representation found in one of the papers I referenced, there are only three diagrams which are UV divergent. For example, one of them looks like this. It has seven propagators. Now, if you do the power counting, the integration measure D6L1, D6L2, D6L3, the integration measure has a mass dimension 3 times 6 equals 18, but the propagators take down 9 times 2 equals 18 mass dimensions. So again, this is log divergent. You can simply set external momentum to 0, and you obtain, you obtain vacuum integrals with dots indicating propagators raised to higher powers. So this I will call V, integral A, VA. This one will be called integral B, VB. So here again we see the miracle that the gravity and Yamil's divergence have a very similar structure. So the gravity divergence will be proportional to VA plus 3VB. And for the 1 over NC suppressed part of the single trace color structure in Yang Mills, we also see the same expression. Is this quantity UV divergent? The answer is yes, because from explicit calculations, we know that VA has the UV pole of like this, and VB is given by an expression involving a transcendental number, epsilon, theta 3 minus 1 over 3. Okay, now if we evaluate this on the maximal cut, the integration measure will be given by these six propagators. And now I have some degree 3 polynomial raised to the power d minus 4 over 2, which equals 1. In six dimensions. So the calculation is again very easy. You just pick up specific coefficients of certain monomials in this Bykov polynomial, PZI. It turns out that VA on the maximal cut, just by doing the counter integral and locating the coefficient of the monomial, you actually get 0 on the maximal cut. And for VB, you get you get something non-zero, something you get 1 on the maximal cost. And here, unlike the case of two loops, the maximal cost is not going to give you the full answer. But we see that the maximal cost actually locates the leading transcendental part of the answer, theta 3. And the only integral which does not vanish on the maximal cost is the one with this transcendental number theta 3. And you can explain this by typing out explicit loop calculations. You can only get theta 3 from a genuine 6 propagator diagram. If you cancel any propagator, get a diagram like this, you do the explicit loop calculation, you are not going to get a number like theta 3, but you only get very simple numbers like pi, some special values of gamma functions. So at 3 loops, we can make a precise identification between the maximum cost and the leading transcendental part of the UV divergence. Which unfortunately, the connection is only qualitative at higher loop orders. So I'll just briefly mention that at 4 loops, if you look at integrals on the maximum cost and look at their UV pole, you get something, you get gamma special values of gamma functions. But in the end, you have another component, which is some unknown for loop, is from some unknown propagator integral. It's only so there's some number which is only known numerically. It has been evaluated to like 1,000 digits numerically, but no one knows how to write down its exact analytic expression. So this is from integrals which are non-zero on this maximal cost, and for integrals which integral to zero on this maximal cost, you only get well-known numbers of gamma functions. For example, two numbers that appear are these. So at 4 loops, we can again associate the maximal cost with the. I don't know how to define transcendentality in this case, but you can intuitively associate the maximal cost with the most complicated part of the UV divergence. Now let's go to 5 loops. So 5 loops, there will be a key difference from 2 and 3 loops. It's the fact that the maximal cost cannot localize all the integration variables. So for the remaining degrees of freedom, you need to carefully choose the contours and to preserve IBP relations, which govern the UV divergence behavior. So I'll draw a top-level 5-loop topology here. The simplest diagram will be this, which is just just a cube. And this one is a cross cube. There are two more diagrams, there are two more diagrams which have only cubic propagators and no double propagators. I'll draw them here. So it turns out that for these two diagrams, the maximal cost integration volume is zero because for these two diagrams, the Bychoff polynomial vanishes on the maximal cost. And interestingly, these are exactly the topologies which contain internal triangles. For these topologies, there are no triangles or bubbles, and you only have internal boxes. And these two topologies have a non-zero Bychoff polynomial on the maximal cost. And for example, for the cross Q, I'll write down the integration measure. So we will have 12 propagators, each raised to some power. Then we will have, so we have 12 propagators, but at 5 loops, there are 15 independent dot products, L1 squared, dot dot dot, L5 squared, and Li dot Lj, if you do the counting, there are 15 of them. So after localizing 12 integration variables using the maximal cuts, I have 3 degrees of freedom that remains, Z13, Z14, and 15. And here, okay. Now I just write down the Bicov polynomial, which has actually turns out to have. I haven't defined the numerators. So E1 equals L1 dot L3, E14 equals L7 dot L6. E15 equals minus L3 dot L4. So the loop, the L1 is here, L3 is here, L7 is here, L6 is here, L4 is here. Okay, so all these Z variables are quadratic in loop momenta. Obviously, the propagators are Li squared, so they are quadratic. These numerators, Z13, Z14, and Z15, are the quadratic. So so together, they form the integration measure from Z1 to Z15. And now the Bicov polynomial is written down here. This is raised to some fractional power, which is minus 4 over 5 in D equals 22/6. And of course, this polynomial will have off-shell terms of order Z1 until Z12. So I've set Z1 until Z12, all these inverse propagators, to 0 in this expression here. I can just perform the integral on the maximal cut again by switching to the contour integral prescription, and the contour integral with some power of z is equivalent to taking derivative of z and then set z to 0. So in the end, I obtain expressions like this.
Sorry, why don't you do what you did before, just to take a correct power such as you get?
That's a good question. The reason is that now I have fractional power here, so I cannot, it's not literally just a simple polynomial, I extract the coefficient of the monomial. So the contour integral will have to be understood as a derivative operation. So dz1 over z1 to some power p1, this contour integral of some function f will be equal to a derivative. So you take derivative p1 minus 1 times on this f, and then you set z equals 0. So here, actually in the Bicov polynomial, I have to keep the off-shell terms in these propagators. Only after taking derivatives several times, depending on the power, after that, I set the z variable to 0. And that will be the value of the contour integral. And that's just from elementary complex analysis. So unfortunately, I'll have to take the derivative many times of this degree 5 polynomial. So that's actually a heavy part of the computation. This polynomial is actually quite big because there are off-shell terms which I've extruded. But it's just taking derivatives, and that's very easily done using computer algebra. When the smoke clears, I get an expression involving the remaining three integration variables. Now, after taking derivatives, I've set order these to zero. So I just get the on-shell part of the cycle polynomial, only depending on these three variables. Here, because I've taken derivatives, the cycle polynomial will be raised to power minus 4 over 5, but minus n after I've taken n derivatives.
I don't still understand, because you are taking derivatives to bring that to z1 up to z12. So you just cannot set that to 0 in the beginning. I guess it's going to take derivatives.
That's correct. First, I set them non-zero, and then I take derivatives. For example, if I have z1 cubed here, I have to take derivative twice, and before I can set z1 to zero. But in the end, so when I take derivatives, I'll take some powers from this exponent. But in the end, I can still set z1, for example, to zero. In the end, you only get this expression. But to the intermediate steps of the calculation will involve the off-shell terms.
Because the result that you wrote seems like that you got it based on some dimensional analysis or something.
Oh, the coefficient. There's an overall coefficient. Some coefficient. Yeah. And I have to sum over all possible powers of I'll end up with hundreds of terms, and each term is these three integration variables, and with these numerators raised to some power x1, x2, x3, and each term has its own coefficient. And to get these hundreds of coefficients, I'll have to do that calculation, just computing derivatives. So this integral can actually be performed. I have 5 minutes left. I'll just that's the last thing I can do is tell you how this integral is performed. So I'll change to I'll extract an overall factor of z. So I'll demand z13 plus z14 plus z15 equals z. So z is the sum of the three. So the overall z integral will be log divergent, giving you an overall UV pole 1 over epsilon. And the coefficient of the UV pole will be given by this two-dimensional integral in alpha and beta. So 0 to 1 d alpha, 0 to 1 minus alpha d beta. Then now I have alpha, beta, and gamma, and 1 minus alpha or 1 minus beta. These are z13, z14, and z15, each to some power. Then I have this Michael polynomial, which I've turned into alpha beta 1 minus alpha minus beta times 1 minus beta. So the power of the Virchow polynomial will be dictated by this. So this power of the Virchow polynomial will be correlated with these index values. So it's some expression like this. So a two-dimensional integral, which I can perform exactly to give a bunch of gamma functions. So the result in terms of the gamma functions will be something like this, 2 plus minus x2 minus x3 over 5 gamma x1 plus x2 plus x3. Okay, I won't bother writing down the full result. So I'll have 2 gamma functions on the denominator and 4 gamma functions on the numerator. If the gamma function, the arguments are these index values. So to recap, we've performed the counter integrals by taking derivatives according to the power to which the propagator is raised. And after derivative is, computation is finished, we set the propagators to 0, leaving only 3 variables in the final integral to be performed. And each can have some numerator, like any final integral, they can have some numerators raised to some powers, x1, x2, and x3 in this case. So by performing the integral on this, so by performing this integral, I guess this exact expression. And so I've glossed over some details, which is that the integration contour I'm choosing is actually compatible with the IBP relations. They will produce the same prediction as a brute force linear system IBP reduction. So if I do the calculation in 22/5, and plug in these values in terms of gamma functions. So after including all the diagrams, the final expression turns out to be 0. So confirming that the so-called leading transcendental part of the UV divergence is indeed 0 in 22/5 dimensions, compatible with the prediction from standard arguments about supersymmetry and duality symmetry. But so of course this is a good non-trivial check on the correctness of the n equals 8 5 loop integrand, which was announced earlier in this workshop. And our next goal, of course, is to calculate the divergence in 24/5. Again, we can exploit the vast simplification arising from the maximal cut just to obtain the coefficient of the top level master integral in a different language, just to obtain the leading transcendental part of the result in 24/5 dimensions. And if we get something non-zero, it will almost certainly mean this theory is UV divergent. And if we get zero, it will be strong but not conclusive evidence for the enhanced cancellation at 5 loops in supergravity. So that concludes our talk. And in conclusion, we've performed a non-trivial check of the n equals 8 supergravity integrand at 5 loops by computing the leading transcendental part of UV divergence in 22/5 dimensions. And we formulated methods to simplify UV divergence calculations using the maximal cut. And we can comment on the integrand construction. So here, it's possible to break the integrand into different sectors according to their vacuum integrals. So there are certain cancellations which can be seen just by knowing the integrand in a specific sector. And so you could imagine maybe at higher loops it's too difficult to construct the integrand, but maybe still possible to do it for a specific sector of vacuum integrals on the maximal cut. And as a last technical command, we need extension of this method to 4 dimensions, which for which the Bicoff representation may break down. And thank you very much.
Can I ask here, so here in this last step, So this one integral you rewrote as a sum over this x1, x2, and x3, then you integrate it, and then you put everything together and put 0.
Yeah.
Now, is it possible to sum the integrals at this level before you integrate over this alpha and beta and see the cancellation there before the alpha beta integration?
Okay, yeah, that would be a very good question if you ultimately want to understand the cancellation from some field theory point of view, then that would be very important. But here,
because if you take the different integrals and write it in this basis, this is basically right, the basis with these C coefficients, does the cancellation already happen at the level of this basis? Or?
No, we have to literally sum over all the integrals. And at first, we miss a few diagrams due to some bug in the code, and we get something non-zero. We really have to sum over everything.
No, sum over all diagrams, I agree with that. I just mean that each monomial, if it gets zero coefficient.
It also reminds on the D equals 22 fifths, you have to plug in that number.
So I don't get zero coefficients for each monomial. It's
even if you sum over all integrals, you don't get zero coefficients.
No, I have to sum over all the monomials using the explicit gamma function values to get the cancellation.
Okay, but is there, okay, so if this, but is it still some way how to see, because in the end it's some black box, you integrate, you have a bunch of gamma function and it's zero, right, in the end. But can you then rearrange the, well, that would be a question, can you rearrange before the alpha beta integration?
So actually, I have a second way to show this is zero without using the gamma functions. But unfortunately, the second method is even more technical. I simply perform IBP reduction on the maximal cut, and I obtain linear relations between these integrals. And I don't have to know their explicit values. I can use the linear relations to reduce all the integrals to one master integral, and in the end, that master integral has a zero coefficient.
So it's the IBP on this, basically these objects. Yeah.
So the gamma functions can be considered as like an exact solution of the IBP system in this case.
Several charges of X's lead to integrals, lead to expressions which are otherwise related.
Right, so you would have to factor out.
Is the label problem still there, right? Like, what is that in each diagram depends on what you choose to be L1, L2, L3, L4.
Yeah, that's right. So even before you do the vacuum expansion, you need to choose some labels before you can expand it into vacuum diagrams. And if you choose labels differently, you end up with different vacuum diagrams. And the two sets of vacuum diagrams are only equal to each other after you perform IBP reduction or some explicit integration like this. So the label problem is still there. And so this is very much on the calculational side, but the calculation is still much simpler than a full calculation because we rely on some maximal cuts. So our hope is maybe there's a possibility it's easier from this kind of calculation to eventually get some field theoretic understanding.
Okay. I have a technical question. So for this kind of integral, do you pick up the region of the integration to be the back of polynomial to be positive?
Yeah, and that's correct.
That's a connection.
Yeah, so I'm integrating over alpha and z is from integrate from 0 to infinity. Alpha and beta integrate in the unit region. So before I extract the overall z factor, I just have all the variables integrating to infinity. So if you look at the integration boundary, for example, if you just look at z13 and z14, you are requiring both of them to be greater than zero, you are integrating in this part of the plane. And on the integration boundary, the x and y axis, z13 and z14 are zero. And this Bykov polynomial is zero on the boundary. And so because so it's actually the Markov polynomial. So if you do the integration without any cuts, the integration region will have the boundary of the integration region is where this Markov polynomial vanishes. So in the contour integration here, we have to choose a similar boundary condition to so that the IBP relations end up the same as the fully uncut integral IBP relations. Okay.
More questions? If there are no more questions, let's thank Mao again.